Welcome to the podcast. We've got a great lineup of tech, local news, and policy stories to get into today.
We absolutely do. But before we get into the heavy stuff, we have to talk about what is happening outside right now in downtown Grand Rapids. It is currently 56 degrees with scattered clouds, and it is going to get incredibly warm as the day goes on.
That's right. The forecast shows us hitting 64 degrees by 3 p.m. and topping out at an unseasonable 70 degrees by 6 p.m. tonight. And the skies are supposed to stay clear, with barely a 10% chance of rain.
To put that in perspective, the historical average high for Grand Rapids in April is usually around 57 degrees. So hitting the low 70s is a massive outlier for this time of year. It's the kind of transitional spring weather that has everyone rushing to book a tea time or get out to an early season sporting event.
It really is. Enjoy it while it lasts, because April in Michigan is notoriously unpredictable. All right, looking ahead at today's show, we are going to dive into a massive new education budget proposal in the state legislature that could change what kids are allowed to buy in school cafeterias.
And we're also going to look at the precarious situation facing a popular Grand Rapids diner, where a seemingly simple administrative hurdle might force them to close their doors for good.
Let's start with a major policy shift coming out of Lansing. The Republican-led Michigan House has just proposed a massive new education budget, coming in at $21.5 billion. But what's really catching everyone's attention isn't just the top-line number. It's a specific dietary provision buried in the proposal.
Right. The proposed budget includes a strict prohibition on the sale of soda pop and candy on school grounds. But there is a very specific condition attached to this. The ban applies specifically to schools that receive state funding for their breakfast and lunch programs, which, in reality, is the vast majority of public school districts in the state. This is part of a broader, ongoing legislative effort in Michigan to heavily regulate the nutritional quality of food provided to students. Supporters are framing this as a necessary step to improve student health, reduce sugar intake, and ultimately help kids maintain focus in the classroom.
And on the surface, pushing for healthier environments in schools is a universally popular concept. But when you dig into the mechanics of how schools actually operate, this creates a fascinating conflict between state-mandated nutritional standards and the operational autonomy of individual school districts. Exactly. Because for a lot of these schools, vending machines that sell soda and candy aren't just there for convenience. They are a legitimate revenue stream. The money generated from those sales often goes directly into funding extracurricular activities, whether that's the marching band, the debate team, or various athletic programs. And that's where the pushback is likely going to come from. Critics of the measure argue that by cutting off that revenue stream, the state is essentially forcing schools to either cut those extracurricular programs or find the money elsewhere, which usually means leaning harder on parents for fundraising or dipping into already stretched general funds. It's a classic unfunded mandate scenario, even if it's technically tied to receiving the meal program funding. The state says, if you want our money for meals, you can't sell these other items. It really forces the hands of the local school boards. And it's interesting to view this in the context of previous legislative attempts in Michigan.
You're talking about the recent pushes to ban specific artificial dyes and chemical additives in school meals, right? Exactly. We've seen a growing appetite in the legislature to dictate the minutiae of school nutrition. But banning a specific red dye in a supplied meal is structurally different from telling a high school they can't sell a Snickers bar at a vending machine to fund new uniforms. One regulates the quality of state-provided food, the other regulates independent commerce on school grounds. And the fact that this is coming from the Republican-led House adds an interesting political dynamic, as that caucus traditionally favors local control and less state interference in municipal operations. It shows how the issue of childhood nutrition and health is scrambling some of the usual partisan lines.
It will be very interesting to see how the school administrative associations and teachers' unions respond to this $21.5 billion package as it moves through the legislative process. The loss of discretionary vending machine funds might seem small at the state level, but for a local principal trying to balance a club budget, it's a very real headache.
Moving from state budgets to local business,
We have a story that highlights just how fragile the restaurant industry can be, even for popular establishments. The Good Truckin' Diner location in Grand Rapids is facing a potential closure, and it could happen as soon as April 26th.
This story has had a lot of twists over the last few days. Good Truckin' Diner is very well known for its all-day breakfast and brunch. They opened this Grand Rapids location in 2023, expanding from their original, very successful spots in Lansing. But recently, an unauthorized post went up on their social media claiming the restaurant would close on April 19th.
Which obviously sent a panic through their customer base. That post was quickly deleted, and the owner, Nick Sinacropi, had to step in and clarify what was actually going on. He confirmed that while the April 19th date was false, the restaurant is indeed in jeopardy and could close by April 26th if they can't resolve some major ongoing issues. And the core issue here isn't a lack of customers or bad food. It entirely comes down to a liquor license. Sinacropi explained that the restaurant has been operating without a liquor license, and that administrative hurdle has created a cascading effect that is destroying their ability to keep the place staffed. It's a perfect case study in restaurant economics. If you are running a popular brunch spot, alcoholic beverages like mimosas and Bloody Marys are essential. Not only are they high-margin items for the business itself, but they significantly drive up the total bill for a table, which directly impacts the servers. In the hospitality industry, front-of-house staff rely on tips based on a percentage of the total check. If a table of four comes in and drops $60 on drinks before they even order food, the server makes a much better tip. Without that liquor license, the check averages plummet.
Exactly. And Sinacropi has essentially said that because they can't sell alcohol, the servers aren't making enough money, which has led to a mass departure of staff. You can't run a diner without servers, no matter how good the pancakes are. It's a brutal bind for a small business owner to be in.
It really highlights the unseen risks of restaurant expansion. Opening a new location means dealing with municipal zoning, health inspections, and in this case, state liquor control boards. A delay in any one of those administrative departments can fundamentally break your business model. It also brings up an interesting point about crisis communication. When that unauthorized post went up about the April 19th closure, it forced the owner into a reactive stance. Managing public communication during an internal crisis is incredibly difficult, and misinformation can sometimes accelerate a business's decline if vendors or remaining staff panic. Fortunately, the diner's Lansing locations are completely unaffected by this. But for the Grand Rapids spot, the clock is ticking loudly toward that April 26th deadline. It will be a real shame to lose a vibrant local business simply because the administrative red tape couldn't be cleared in time to retain the staff.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we get out of here.
Sounds good. What's first on the list?
If you live in Cascade Township, you might want to bring your bird feeders inside. Resident Julie Romance recently captured security camera footage of a black bear brazenly raiding a feeder right on her deck.
She actually moved the feeder closer to the house after noticing it was bent, suspecting a bear despite her neighbors being skeptical. Well, the camera proved her right.
The Michigan DNR estimates there are about 2,100 black bears in the Lower Peninsula. As they wake up from their winter dens this time of year, they are hungry and looking for easy calories.
The DNR strongly advises removing bird feeders, securing your trash, and keeping pet food indoors during the spring and summer so these bears don't lose their natural fear of humans.
In local sports, the West Michigan Whitecaps finally hit a speed bump, seeing their impressive 7-game winning streak snapped in a 4-2 loss to the Lake County Captains on Tuesday. It was a really rough night offensively for the Caps. They were held to just 4 hits across the entire game and struck out a staggering 15 times. Meanwhile, Lake County brought the power, hitting 3 solo home runs, courtesy of Bennett Thompson, Luke Hill, and Aaron Walton, to secure the win. Despite the tough loss and the offensive struggles, the Whitecaps are still holding on to first place in the Midwest League Eastern Division, so they are still in a great position early in the season.
And that is going to do it for our show today. Thanks for spending part of your day with us.
Absolutely. Get out there and enjoy this 70-degree weather while it lasts. But remember to bring your bird feeders in before the bears get to them.
Great advice. We'll be back next time with more news and analysis. Take care, everyone.